We interrupt this program.
We interrupt this program to bring you Vikings Betline, the one show where you get to react to how the Purple played right away.
Right away.
Call in now with your thoughts on the game. 651-646-8255. This is Vikings Betline.
Take that with the Betline. I don't need to take my medicine.
Presented by Red Cow and Red Rabbit.
I don't know that this passing game can carry them.
Now, alongside the superstar Mike Morris.
So much fun to watch.
I just don't know what the problem is.
Here's Phil Mackey.
Drop back time for Keenum. And he goes down the field and he is intercepted. He is picked off by Worley. Third and one. And they run it straight ahead. Oh, breaking it. No one in the secondary. It's going the distance. Jonathan Stewart. 60 yards. Third and goal. It's Stewart. Stacked up, driving, and he takes the Vikings with him. Across for the touchdown. Duke's got time. Now he's breaking down on him. Backpedal to get away from it. Off his back foot. He finds the man wide open. Funchess for the touchdown.
Vikings Betline is live, and there are countless things to talk about after a road loss in Carolina, but let's watch this. Detroit lining up for a game-winning field goal here, Star. Division on the line for the Vikings, and that kick is good with 20 seconds to go in Tampa, which means if the Lions hold on with 20 seconds to go, the Vikings will not clinch the division this afternoon. Packers go into overtime against the Browns. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Red Cow and Red Rabbit powering this edition of Ventline and every week. And we're also live on Facebook.com/1500ESPN. We have some open phone lines, so grab them. 651-646-8255. Looked like they were dead. Vikings come back, tie the game, and then Cam Newton busts off a massive run to basically seal it for Carolina there late in the fourth. Just your quick thoughts, superstar Mike.
It's a no-brainer. You're probably going to lose a game that you make that many mistakes in. We're talking about face mask on one drive to keep one of their drives alive. And of course, then there's the catch, non-catch in the end zone by Thielen. You could gripe about all that too. We had a couple calls definitely not go our way. And definitely that thing in the back of the end zone right before the half hurt. That hurt. And then, of course, there was the fumble off the hit from behind Case Keenum's hand that was ruled in their favor too. So, I mean, you have two tough applications of two very, very strange rules in the National Football League applying to us today. Outside of that, they played really well. The Carolina Panthers played really, really well. And when you break off a couple runs, that's when your defense is just saying, you know, we're either tired at the end. I think that was the case with a Cam Newton taking off for that long run, as they were just tired and you just start to lose that pop.
Yeah.
But they hung on to tie that thing up. I thought they were really going to win it.
In case you're wondering if this afternoon of football can get any weirder for the Vikings, Joe Webb is playing in a blizzard right now as starting quarterback, not starting, but current quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. Let's get right to the phone lines. I will say this. We'll get to Chancey and Fargo here right off the bat. 651-646-8255. I think in the NFL and even college to some extent, you can tell how good a team is by how well or how they look or what the result is in their worst games. And if that's the worst the Vikings have looked all season in a lot of areas, turnovers, bad penalties, gashed on the ground, 200-plus yards rushing, and you're driving to maybe win the game at the end still,
sure are.
That's yes. Pretty incredible.
Yep.
Chancey and Fargo, you're on Vikings Ventline first off the bat. What did you think?
Very entertaining game, guys. I thought there was a lot of action both ways. Like you guys said, the turnovers really hurt, the dropped passes. I feel the way you guys do. If the team is that resilient and that's about as poor as they can play against a good team on the road, it's not a bad thing. But I think the number one difference, besides the obvious, the turnovers penalties this week, was the red zone efficiency for the Vikings just wasn't quite there, closing out a few of the drives, whether it was the drops, the pass that wasn't on the mark to Diggs there. Other weeks, they have been on the money when they get inside the 10, and settling for some of those field goals really hurt. I still wonder if Kai Forbath is trustworthy. The kick that he took, the long-range kick, I don't think it was blocked, and it reminded me of a Blair Walsh kick that nailed the pylon in the end zone a couple years ago. But, you know, if it wasn't for home field advantage with the Eagles kind of being on the line and down to their stretch, I wouldn't even mind the loss. If anyone would have said they're going to win two out of those three road games in a row, most people would have been happy. We were just getting greedy at this point. So let's see. Go Rams, and hope the Vikings can still lock down that home field.
Yeah.
So, thanks,
all right,
guys.
Chanty, that's a good phone call right off the bat. Star, let's go to Lee in New Mexico. A few open phone lines here, 651-646-8255. What's up, Lee? You're on Ventline.
Hey, man. What's up? I got one word. Teddy.
Wow, you're going Teddy after that game, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you had a good win streak, and hey, it's time to turn it over. I want to read the lines, because after this game, there were so many inaccuracies. Like going, Keenan was underthrowing guys. I mean, there was a couple times where Diggs could have caught a touchdown on them, and it's just not. It was, I mean, Case was good under pressure. I mean, he evaded a couple of sacks, but still, I mean, I'm not too upset about this loss. I mean, it is what it is. I felt it coming. I mean, we weren't going to just win out till the Super Bowl, you know, but. I mean, if that's the case, but I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of time to put Teddy in. What do you guys think?
Wow, Lee in New Mexico. Star, do you think it's time to put Teddy Bridgewater in?
No, not at all. I mean, not at all. I mean, we had so many things that went wrong, and it wasn't Case Keenum. I mean, he had a tough day. It started off wrong for him, but he came back. He had the resilience to come back and put him right back in that game. That last throw that he had to Adam Thielen was a great pass. It was right on the money, and it was housed for a touchdown. And you know what? Every offensive lineman got hurt. He was under duress all day long. But and that's certainly why you wouldn't want to have Teddy in right now. You would not want him in that barrage of, you know, offensive linemen trying to match up with people and not being able to do it.
Yeah, the end of that game was kind of a flashback to, oh, this is what quarterbacks, whether it's Bridgewater or even Sam Bradford at times last year, this is what they dealt with before the Vikings fixed the offensive line. But with Elflein not starting and Riley Reiff was out for basically the whole second half, so they're shuffling pieces around. By the end of the game, I think he only had one guy, Joe Berger, playing his actual position as a starting offensive lineman.
Yeah, it was musical chairs, as we are so used to doing and seeing around here. Isadora got in the game. Hill had to change positions twice. Searles had to change positions, and Easton, everyone. I mean, the whole thing got ransacked. So, Easton was playing center, so it was a mess. It was kind of a mess, but the way they came out of this game, they can actually take something fairly positive out of it, is the way they came back and fought to come back and tie this up on the road with all these mistakes and calls going against them. A couple calls that were really tough calls.
Yeah,
but the application of the rules, did they apply? Yes. But are they bad rules? They're horrible rules. I hate them.
In fact, we should throw that out. I'd love to get into, you know, let's get through an initial wave of calls here. And I'd love to get back to the Thielen call specifically, because letter of the law, the way that they've written the rule, and it's still impossible to fully define what a catch is, but I want that to be a catch. I don't care if it was a purple uniform or a Browns uniform.
Exactly.
I want that to be a catch. And so if you guys have thoughts on that play specifically, 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Let's go out to our buddy Realistic Randy in Oakland. What's up, Randy?
Hey, what's going on? I'm just sitting here at the kitchen table with a nice glass of wine to go with my crow that I have on the table that I like to be served medium well.
You know, Randy, if you're going to talk about Cam Newton, it's possible we might need to share that glass of wine and the crow that you're about to eat.
Oh, yeah. And see, I have to face it. I went out there. I was fully confident in this team because after holding the Atlanta Falcons without a touchdown and only 9 points on the road, and then holding the Detroit Lions, being able to beat the Detroit Lions at Thanksgiving, two teams who I think have better offenses than the Carolina Panthers do, they come out here and the defense just looked absolutely flat-footed. I don't even know where you even start. The run defense was piss poor. Oh, excuse me for that. The run defense was terrible. The pass defense, the way they scored their touchdowns, I mean, you give up a 60-yard fluky run to their running back. You give up that last-second run where Cam Newton took off for about 40, 50 yards as well. And then it was even one of the touchdown passes that they gave up. Where they gave up, it wasn't back-to-back face mask calls, but it was basically two face mask calls in the same drive. And then there was another touchdown pass to Funchess where there wasn't a single high safety to help out whatsoever once the pocket collapsed around Cam Newton. So I'm a little bit disappointed. Case Keenum is the last person I'm blaming for this game. And the one thing that I take, yes, we're 10-3, we're still in a good spot, but the one thing that I take away from this game, why are they force-feeding Laquon Treadwell on the field? There was a chance where it was 3rd and 16 or whatever it was on the final possession, and Laquon Treadwell, if he made that catch, you would have got, what, 5, 6, maybe 7 yards to maybe give a better chance on fourth down. I don't understand why they're doing with Laquon Treadwell like they did with Blair Walsh, Christian Ponder, and Matt Kalir. They're force-feeding him out there even though he stinks. Jarius Wright is a better receiver. I don't get why they're trying to do that. He can't get separation, and every time you throw the ball to him, you're asking for it to be picked off. I don't understand why they do that.
Randy in Oakland, bringing it always with a good phone call here on Ventline. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of done with Treadwell. I don't. There's just, he caught a couple passes, but there's just nothing. He's just a guy.
He is just a guy right now, anyway. It's unless they can find some way to motivate him to another level. But he has become sort of the next Cordell Patterson. Supposedly very, very talented. I mean, Cordell did serve a purpose at one point. He was a lot more valuable than Treadwell, even. But and now we have Diggs deciding that he's going to take the easy way out. Every time he catches the ball, he's going to just go down on his face, or he's going to just fall in front of some would-be tacklers instead of taking the hit. Or, oh, I'm going to get hit. That pass is a little bit high, and if I, you know, if I lay myself out to dry, I'm going to get waxed. Dude, you just set up that was the interception that set up the long run. He's just a man. He took a step
backward super talented.
For me. He took a step back for me today.
He's super talented, but there, I think the biggest difference between Diggs and Thielen is the ability or the willingness to, I don't know, there's something about Thielen's ability to break a little more free, you know, for the run that he had today.
There's a toughness thing about it.
There's a difference between the two guys that has definitely popped up this season, for sure.
Definitely. And I'm telling you, Diggs is going to look at that film, and he's going to break that down with the other wide receivers and the wide receiver coach in their segment meeting, and they're going to look at that and say, no one's going to say anything. It's just going to go complete silence in the room because no one's going to want to say anything, and he's going to be looking at it going, yeah, I know. I am the biggest sissy on the field. I am the biggest sissy. And wait till Zimmer sees it. He already knows. But wait until he points that out. That you're, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Turn on a dime and make some yards. What receiver isn't taught to turn either left, right, break inside or out? And he's just going to go down and say, someone touch me. Come up and touch me anyway. I lose my mind when I see people do that.
I feel you on that a little bit. I mean, of all the things to get after them for today, I don't think that was a reason, like a main reason why they didn't win the game.
Yeah, I just had to bring it up.
I mean, they, you know, as far as their defense goes, that's one of the worst performances defensively, if not the worst. They give up 216 yards on the ground, 6 yards per carry. And then at a time where Carolina was just ready to hand you all the momentum, and you let Cam Newton break free. And, of course, much like Realistic Randy in Oakland, he called into our show this week, the Mackey and Judge show, and I was pounding on Cam Newton all week, and I stand by it. Cam Newton absolutely torched the Vikings today with his legs.
He did.
My beef with him throughout the years is if you take away the running, and that's a huge part of his success, and so you can't just fully take it away, but you know, if it's 3rd down and 9 or whatever, he has one trick in his passing arsenal, and it's throw the ball down the field, hope for a pass interference or a big play.
Yeah.
And so he's going to hit home runs once in a while.
Yeah.
But the Vikings held him in check, 13 of 25 for a 137, a pretty bad interception late in the game where he overthrows McCaffrey. And then to let him break free, they had him wrapped up the entire game for 3 hours.
They did.
And he breaks the one big run, probably, you know, the 2 or 3 times all year that he's going to break a run like that. And it happens to be at the worst possible time. But you know what? If that's as bad as it gets for the Vikings, I don't think there's much to apologize for, Star. 3 road games in a row. You finally lose a game after 2 months of a winning streak. And you're in prime position to go 13-3 or 12-4 and host at least one playoff game. We'll see what happens tonight with the Eagles and the Rams. But and by the way, the Packers just won against the Browns in overtime. They came back from down 14 points in the fourth quarter. And now Aaron Rodgers likely comes back because they're 7-6. So you're probably going to have to play that game on the 23rd on the road against Aaron Rodgers now in 2 weeks.
No question.
Something to note.
Yep. And the Lions won. So you got someone on your back the whole time who can also tie you if you don't win one out. If you don't win out and they continue to win out, I mean, yeah, that's still a possibility.
Yeah.
That's how quickly things can change on just one game, just 1 week in this league. It looked like Detroit and Green Bay were both going to lose. Guess what? It's just not over till it's over.
Well, go beat the Bengals at home. They just the Bengals got smoked by the Bears today in their home field. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Vikings Vet Line, powered by Red Cow and Red Rabbit. Brian in San Jose. What's up, Brian?
Hey, what's going on, Phil? How you doing? Sorry.
Doing good.
What'd you think of that game today, Brian?
Hey, man. You know, so I'm all the way out here in California, still repping my Vikes, but today, I would honestly say that I don't want to bag on Case too much because I think he showed me a lot today by being down 11 points in the fourth quarter and was still able to somehow find a way to tie the game up. But at the same time, there was a few throws today that were just having me a little, you know, that he missed digs in the end zone. He throws it inside when the ball clearly should have been outside, which allowed the defender to get a hand on it. He also, even the Diggs interception, I'm going to put that 90% on Diggs, but you're still throwing it high on the ball that Diggs is most likely going to take a good shot on. So
it was a bad throw.
That's not a good, it wasn't a great throw. So I don't want to put it all on Case because the defense, like you said, gave up 200 and over 200 yards on the ground today. So, yeah, that was it was a tough one, and it was just, you know, like I said, I can't put it all on Case, but I thought that he had a couple of throws today. He had Thielen wide open on the sideline and tries to throw a back shoulder throw when Thielen is streaking down the sideline wide open, and it's just like
that's Thielen.
Those throws in the you thought that was Thielen?
That was Thielen. He was supposed to come back at that. He was supposed to come back at that ball. I mean, and I saw. I know what you're talking about too. Thielen, you can see the frustration on his face. He was absolutely frustrated with himself. He slapped his hands together and he smacked his helmet once or twice, and he's like, that's on me. I could tell definitely that was a receiver mix-up.
Okay, well, I'll take that one back.
It looked like it on TV. It looked like, you know, where are you going with the football? I mean, Thielen's thinking, you know, double move, hit me down the field, and, you know, the real read.
Absolutely. I got mixed up on that. But overall, like you guys are saying, there's no need to panic. We're 10-3. Had a couple tough calls today, and just overall, I think we're playing well this season, and I don't think there's any reason, like Phil was just saying, I don't think there's really any reason to apologize for going 3-1 on a road trip where we haven't played at home in nearly a month or two, and still 10-3 on the season. So all in all, man, I'd like to say thank you guys for having Vikings Vent Line. You guys are give us a great show every week. Go Vikes!
Thank you,
Ryan. Thank you for calling, man. Appreciate it. Let's take a call here. We have a couple open phone lines now because the first wave is starting to get through their points, and that means lines open up. So 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Your chance to chime in. Your thoughts on the Vikings today, your thoughts on the officiating, the Adam Thielen touchdown that was called off and pulled off the table. Your thoughts on how far the Vikings can still go despite their loss today, 651-646-8255. 877-615-1500. And your thoughts on Keenum, too. We've had a couple Keenum phone calls. Philip in Egan with parents who have great taste in naming their children.
Really? One L and Philip. Oh, okay.
Me, too.
All right.
Funny.
We're the more sophisticated Philips. We don't need two L's to prove our
we're
namesake.
We're descended from the Spanish kings.
Yes, exactly.
Oh. Wow.
I'm not sure if you knew that star. Yeah.
Well, I belong to Philip Morris stock. Philip Morris. That was a lot of money there, too. What do you think of that?
You know, thanks for accepting my call. And I think the thing I noticed today was that the Vikings just weren't making the plays that they usually make during the winning streak. You know, dropping balls, Kyle Rudolph, et cetera, and of course, Adam Thielen's lack of at least stopping the interception there. But, yeah, that's what I think. And Adam Thielen's touchdown was, here's my opinion, he's got a hip and an elbow down in the end zone. And then I thought the ground couldn't cause a fumble. And then when, I think it's a disparity when a guy can dive over the goal line, reach the ball out and cross. How about continuation on that play? You know, they reach the ball out and it's slapped away, but he crossed the goal line. I'm unclear on that. Thank you for accepting.
you, Philip?
I don't know if you were clear on it or not. But it was a good, it was a great attempt. No, I know what you're getting at. I made the same point too. How can you break the plane of the goal line with the football instantly? That is seen as a touchdown. The ball comes out. Whatever happens to it at that point doesn't matter, right?
Well,
you're going to tell me you come down with two hands on a football on your chest, put your knee on the ground and an elbow, and roll out of bounds, and then lose some of the grasp, the contact from the, with you, and the impact on the ground causes the ball to jostle, and you still have it at the end of the. I mean, you even roll up with it, right? How is that not a touchdown? I don't get it. If just breaking the goal line, his body and that football are across the goal line.
Sure, but so I'm not defending the rule because I think the rule has a ton of flaws.
Oh God!
But you've got one rule that you're talking about, which is take the ball and have possession of it and cross the goal line, and then if it gets punched out like it did for Stewart at the end of the game, there doesn't matter because you had possession of the ball as a running back or a runner, and then you cross the goal line.
Right.
But that rule is then converging with, and if it's a reception and you're going to the ground, you have to also maintain possession as you go to the ground, and that's where things get really cloudy in the NFL. And I keep going back to the Dez Bryant play in the playoffs from like whatever that was, a handful of years ago, and he catches that ball in the air.
No question.
And as he's going to the ground, so he gets 1 foot, 2 feet, and then the third step for him was actually a controlled step where he's lunging toward.
A football move.
He's got his 2 feet down. Yeah. He's got possession. And the third step as he's still going to the ground is a controlled lunge to the end zone with the ball out. And the ball hits the ground and pops loose.
Keep going. Go ahead.
And all I want is for that to be a reception. And so whatever has to happen going forward, and the Adam Thielen thing, he catches the ball, he gets 1 foot, 2 feet, a knee, an elbow. So whatever you want, like an elbow, as John Madden would say, one elbow equals 2 feet, a knee equals 2 feet, 2 feet equals 2 feet. He got all those things. If he were playing tic-tac-toe or the bingo of things you need to make that a reception, all those things were checked, except he was also going to the ground. And the ball didn't hit the ground. The
caller was mentioning that the ground could not cause a fumble.
Right, it wasn't a fumble.
Which you can't, but it wasn't a fumble.
Yes.
It was a jostle.
The ball pops loose momentarily.
He lost control of it.
But it never hit the ground. I watch that play, just like the Dez Bryant play, and I say, whatever needs to happen with the rule book, let's just scrap the rule book for now. I want that to be a catch in the NFL.
That's a touchdown.
Yeah. I want the Dez Bryant play to be a catch in the NFL.
It just is,
so write the rule in a way that makes it so that is a catch, please, is all I ask the NFL.
I'm the same way. I mean, back in the day, even when I played, no-brainer touchdown. No-brainer. He caught it. Okay, good. Did he lose it? Did he play with it on the way out of bounds? Who cares? His body, he had control with two hands up against his chest, and the ball is in the end zone with him. 2 feet down, 2 points down, whatever, foot, elbow, foot, knee, 2 feet. He's down, and he's in the end zone. Catch. It's a catch.
Yeah.
They're overthinking this thing. The lawyers got involved in the rules committee somewhere, and God knows who else probably got burnt on that and thought, well, there should be a rule there. You know, that something needs to change about that. No, nothing needs to change. Common sense really rules. That's the best rule, is that, my God, you know, we all know, everyone in the stadium, including the opposing team, knows that's a touchdown. What are we trying to make up?
Yeah,
and it needs to go away.
And the only thing I would add is, I understand you have to have a defined catch. You can't just say, let's throw the rules out. If it looks like a catch, it's a catch.
Yeah, I know.
You have to have a defined what is a catch. I understand that. And so we were talking about this in the prep room. And by the way, 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Dennis, Nick, and Mitchell, we're going to get to you guys first in just a second when we're done ranting here. But this was a big play in the game because obviously if the Vikings get the extra 4 points there.
It would have changed everything at half.
Yes.
It would have changed all the momentum, everything in this game. It would have had a butterfly effect on the rest of this football game, trust me.
Yes. I mean, they would have led at halftime. And they wouldn't have been down by two scores. They would have been down by seven instead of 11 and whatever. But
the whole thing. Yeah.
But if you made the rule, just forget about going to the ground nonsense. Because in theory, if I catch a pass as I'm going to the ground but I'm like just off balance going to the ground, I could take 15 stumbling steps and then lunge like in my last breath, right? Lunge forward and the ball pops out And that's incomplete.
Incomplete.
I just ran 15 steps, but I was going to the ground when I caught the ball, right? So if you just made the rule possession and then 2 feet or an elbow or a knee.
Yeah.
And if the ball pops loose, are we okay with that still being a catch? And to me, I'd have to think about it a little bit more, but I think the answer is yes, okay. You caught it. You got 2 feet down. You fall. So you do one of those tightrope Chris Carter lunging as you're falling over 2 feet in. And then as long as you have possession for like at least a beat or something, right?
Look, if you had a sensor on the football anywhere and that sensor breaks the plane with two hands connected to it or whatever a catch, you know, I mean, being able to control it. Let's just say control and it goes across and you have it in hand, in possession. You have possession. I don't care what happens or it jostles or the ground causes jostling. If you go down and you're holding the football and you see that two body parts touch the end zone, touchdown. Or out in the open field, same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, no one needs to have much of an explanation. It's the attorneys and the lawyers, I guess, that need to have an explanation of, wait, let's break down what a catch is. If that comes back from New York today and they go, you know, it's a touchdown. No one in that stadium asks a question like, why was that a touchdown? Nobody does.
And I get it I agree. But then when you get into the business of, okay, if we have to put a definition on it, you got to, you know, you can bring up another example of, let's say you catch a ball diving in the air. All right.
Yep.
And your knee hits, which would be 2 feet. Your knee hits, let's say in the middle of the field at the 50-yard line, right in the smack dab middle of the field. You dive, you possess it while you're in the air, and then your knee hits first, and then your shoulder hits next, but as your shoulder hits, the ball pops out. Well, what we're talking about would be if your knee hit and you have possession for
fumble,
it would be a catch, is what we're saying.
But it would be a catch,
but if no one touches you
and the ball comes out, it's a fumble.
But because the ground
that
can't
was a catch.
But the ground this but is the, where the ground but, can't wait. Cause a fumble if someone tackled you to the ground. But it can,
no,
I think.
But I think the ball has to hit the ground for the ground to cause a fumble. The ball impacting the ground. If it's in the hand, in the possession, and you jostle by, and no one's touched you yet, and the ball comes out, and it hasn't been, it's not the ground that's causing the fumble. It's you're losing possession of it. No one's touched you yet.
I guarantee these conversations have been had over many bottles
times.
Of alcohol.
I guarantee it.
And
you never get
NFL.
Anywhere. But the bottom line is that they've made way too much out of the catch. How do you simplify it? How do you go back to what common sense? I mean, just football in general just needs to be simpler than this. You can't tell me that was not a catch today.
And by the way, I would have said the same thing if it were Devin Funchess who made. I would have said, you know what? I want that in the NFL to be a catch. Personally, that's what I want to be a catch. Dennis in Cottage Grove, you're on Vetline.
Hey guys, totally agree with the rant 100%. Just wanted to say two things, I guess. You know, three turnovers, your offensive line, a lot of guys got hurt, hostile stadium, Carolina had to win, and you still were in the game all the way till the end. I mean, you tied the game, and so, I mean, I guess, you know, I can't feel all that bad about this myself either. I think it showed grit. They showed grit coming back. I think Case did. I mean, was it his greatest game? No, but you get five drop passes from your wide receivers, which they had five all year coming in, that would have made a big difference. So you have all that, and you still almost beat a very good team at their place, which Carolina, you know, very good in Carolina. You almost beat them, and you were tied, you know, with the last couple minutes. And, you know, the Cam thing at the end, E-Bus won. Yeah, I know that was an unfortunate thing. But you know, hey, we'll take care of business next week, and I still think my biggest concern now is the health of the offensive line. I don't know if you guys have any info on that, but, you know, that's going to be a big concern going forward is are these guys healthy and can, you know, especially Elf line. I thought Easton played well today for him, but it'd be nice to have Elf line back so Easton can move, you know, back to his position. And of course, we do need Riley Reiff. So, do you have any updates on any of those guys?
Thank you for the phone call, Dennis. No update. I've been following all the beat writers. We have Matthew Collar from 1500ESPN.com in Carolina right now. And so far, nothing on Riley Reiff. It didn't look serious. It was an ankle, not a knee, which is If he's able to walk on it and it's an ankle, not a knee, yeah. I feel a little bit better about that than if it were a knee.
Oh, definitely,
you know.
I mean, an ankle, but a high ankle sprain. And I'm guessing that that might have been a high ankle sprain the way it looked. As he got it rolled up on from behind on that sack of Case Keenum. A couple of defensive linemen rolled right up into him. And those are pretty bad. Not that they're serious, but they can keep you out of a commission for a while. A high ankle sprain is a big deal if you're an offensive lineman. If you're anything on that football field, that's about an 8-week injury trying to get one of those back. So he'll have to live at Winter Park. He literally is going to have to live there day and night. Then they're going to put treatment on that thing. I know what that is. And you're going to have to stay there overnight, and they're going to wake you up every 3 hours and put ice on it and stem. Mm. And trust me, that really happens. That's how these guys get back on the field the next week. But that's the biggest concern, too. The collar
is right.
You're saying
that the injury could last several weeks, but that he could still play
You could get that back. If it was a high ankle sprain, he won't be able to play next week. But 2 weeks down the road, it's amazing what these guys can do with treatment in 2 weeks, a good tape job, and a spat over that shoe. You could actually get a guy back, playable, I think, even at left tackle. It's amazing. And, of course, it's up to the individual, too. Just genetics come into play there, too.
651-646-8255. One open line if you guys want to grab it right now. Red Rabbit and Red Cow keeping us commercial free on Vikings Vent Line. Nick, you're on with Star and Mackie. What's up, Nick and Belle Plaine?
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good. What do you think, man?
So just to go back to this what a catch and not catch thing is, I don't want to beat a dead horse, and you guys kind of already touched on it. But I guess my question always, like especially today, at the end of that game, we saw Jonathan Stewart jump over the pile and stick the ball, and it got knocked away, right?
Yeah.
When the plane is broke with the ball, whatever happens after that doesn't matter because the play stops.
That's right.
So my question is, when Thielen makes that catch, comes down with 2 feet in bounds, then an arm and a knee, why isn't the play, when he makes that catch, over and what happens after that doesn't? I mean, he's clearly made the catch, and he goes to the ground, and finally the ground hitting his arm made the ball jostle, whatever. But why, when he has clear possession of the ball with 2 feet down, why isn't the play over as a receiver like it is with the running back?
You know what, Nick? I it just struck me. And by the way, are we going to have to call you GGBP now?
Yeah, we might have to go with that for a while GGBP? Until we figure out something else. Yeah, we can go with that.
So I think here's what it should be. And I need to put more thought into this. There might be some loopholes here. But if you catch a pass anywhere on the field, let's just call it the 50-yard line again to keep it simple, and you get you get 2 feet or a knee or an elbow, it's a catch unless the ball then hits the ground as it, like, you lose possession to the ground.
I couldn't agree more.
If you catch a pass and you get a foot, 2 feet, elbow, knee, and then you hit the ground and the ball jostles loose but it doesn't hit the ground, you maintain possession of the ball after it jostles.
It should be a catch. And if it jostles, it dislodges from the receiver, it's not really considered down because it's a fumble. It comes out because you had possession of it, but no one's touched you yet. There's a ball on the ground out there.
Rule that incomplete because you're going to the ground. You didn't complete the process of the catch.
I think if it comes out, but it wasn't the ground that caused it. It was the impact that caused it to the elbow or whatever. It caused it to become dislodged, and you haven't been touched. Now, if someone's touching you as you've done that and it comes out, I say you're down.
But on the Thielen play – oh, go ahead, Nick. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I'm just going to say, and to kind of go on a different little tangent, I just think – personally, I think high-definition TV and instant replay and slow-motion cameras has kind of ruined all of the human element
everything.
That goes
it's just
into
screwed
college
everything.
Football games.
You're right.
Let's just let the refs call the game, and whatever plays out. Then we don't have to listen to this garbage of going back and forth on what should be a catch, what shouldn't be a catch.
You know what it is, Nick? I'm all for replay. I'm more for replay than you guys are. But you know what this reminded me of today, Nick and Superstar? Like, you see these baseball replays now where a guy will pop up, slide into second base, and his foot, not like overslide, that's different, but his foot will pop up a centimeter off the bag, and the tag is still being applied.
Yep.
And they go back and look on 4K resolution, and they see, oh man, that guy's cleat came a quarter inch off the bag.
Clearly,
that's been a non-controversial safe call for 150 years. But now, because technology is so good, we're going
that's
and
so
calling
true.
Those plays out. So that's what it reminded me of today.
If you go,
yeah, I could agree more.
I mean, if you go by, with the bang bang call that the refs always used to have. There isn't a single ref when I played or even thereafter a sum that wouldn't have called that a touchdown today. No-brainer. No one argues it.
No. The Panthers don't even argue it.
You don't hear the boos. None of them do. You don't hear it from the other team, the other coach. He's not going to argue that that's a catch and a touchdown.
Yeah. Now, the Panthers argue it, obviously.
Of course they do.
Because, we can get this overturned now, but we couldn't for 50 years.
Well, that was in New York anyway, right? Didn't it? I mean, don't they review all the touchdowns in New York, or is it done there on the field? I don't know what goes to New York.
Because it was called... It's okay. I am too. The referees are confused, for God's sakes. That was an automatic review because they called it a touchdown on the field. Yeah. Now, if they would have called
it... Of course they did, because it was. Right. Sounds like who's on first? God, Evan Costello.
What's a catch? No, who's a catch?
No, it was a catch.
How's a catch?
Exactly.
Mitchell in Florida, you're on VetLine.
Oh, I hate it.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. This was a game. Superstar, you're going to have to speak to the Vikings fan base like no other, because it's going to be a long week for us.
Yeah, it is.
And specifically what I would like for you to speak about is the psychology of the team going between this game to the next game. You know, I think about Green Bay. I see that they won. I see that they have Aaron Rodgers, and so he's a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. He just wants a chance.
Yeah.
With the team, I'm assuming, you would know this better, but I'm assuming that with a team that hasn't been to a Super Bowl, the psychology can be a little bit more vulnerable. And this is where losing that game is bigger than, say, Green Bay's record right now. They know if they just get a shot, they're in. With the Vikings, we really need things to happen our way because we just haven't been there. And I just want to get your perspective when I get off as far as the psychology of the team. What is being said to them this week? How do they get past this? As far as the O-line, obviously it made it hard for offense, period. I mean, you know, all those injuries just made it very hard to move the ball. But I did think Diggs can come back to the ball sometimes.
Thank you.
It's just some of them passes, he's waiting for it to drop in his lap versus going to get it. The other thing I was thinking is I was curious to know if there was enough chipping that was being called for the running backs to do, given that the tackles were getting beat. And I was just wondering about that, if you saw that. And, of course, the kicker, right? The yips are there, man. It's there. I'm not going to say anything more. We're just going to keep it quiet with him.
You know, Mitchell, you know it's bad when the announcers spend the next 3 minutes trying to figure out that had to be blocked, right? Like, that somebody had to have blocked that. No, dude, it was not blocked.
That's exactly it. And, you know, a topic that I haven't heard brought up, and this is my last point, is my last question is, Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, did they show up enough today? Are they showing up? Like, did they show up enough today? So just the psychology of the team and Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, if you guys could speak about that, I'd appreciate it. Your show is awesome, and I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Well, Mitchell, thank you for the phone call, man. It's a good phone call.
It really is, because there is a psychology in this. It can go either way. And it's because of the head coach that I believe it'll go the right way. This was a bad game. They needed to get out of their system. I mean, every now and then, it gets you. The game jumps up and bites you right in the rear end.
And they almost won.
And they almost still won it. And your evaluation of take the team on its worst loss and how good are they is a good analogy, but a good...
It's brilliant. Brilliant is the word you're looking for.
Brilliant. You're brilliant.
Revolutionary.
I mean, no one's ever had that take. So, with that being said, they did have, probably their worst game thus far, except for maybe Pittsburgh, where they were in between quarterbacks, and Keenum needed some reps, and he didn't have them, so it was going to be a train wreck anyway. When you lose your offensive lineman, big deal. That's a big deal. So, if you can get those guys back, Zimmer's going to say this to him. He's going to say, we got that out of our system, let's go play, and let's get the job done. All that other stuff we need to leave behind us, and a good team can jump up and fight because there's so much season still left. Keenum did not quit. He did not let down a bit. And he ducked out of more sacks and everything else you could possibly imagine. I mean, Julius Peppers was bearing down. The caller just asked, did they chip him enough? I don't think they did. They could have done some more to help him out, that being Riley Reiff or whoever it was after that. I think Hill slid over from right tackle to left tackle and had the monster. But he was lining up on the right side too. Peppers can play both sides, so you have to have help. And I don't know if they did enough of that. The running game was, it was a little stingy.
Yeah, it was sneaky. At one point, they had 100 yards on 20 carries. The Vikings did it, but it didn't look or feel that way. But they had
McKinnon was the changeup. McKinnon was a nice changeup to what we've been seeing as a pretty good dose of Murray. Latavius had a tough day. They started to really bear down on him a little bit, but. Bottom line is this. Get the stinker out of the way. Probably a good time that we did it now rather than later. Let's chase down that division title. And that'll be Zimmer's message. He knows that this team is not the kind of team that's just going to fold right now at 10 wins. There's just no way they're going to fold.
By the way, the Eagles and the Rams are tied at 7 right now, halfway through the first quarter in the home field NFC race. The caller, Mitchell in Florida, also asked about Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter. Did they step up enough? This is my theory, and I am not an X's and O's guy. I just pretend to be one on the radio. I think against a mobile quarterback like Cam Newton, Mike Zimmer defensively isn't looking for those defensive ends to get off the ball and beat the quarterback to that back step and sack him 5 times. I think you'll take the sacks.
Sure.
I think the responsibility against Cam Newton is to make sure you keep that pocket intact so that the Linval Josephs of the world or Anthony Barrs, and they did a good job spying until that last run, they kept Cam Newton off the board from a passing standpoint. I mean, he had a touchdown pass, but he had 137 yards passing. It was that one play right at the end of the game that cost them against Cam Newton. It's not really as much about, like, if you had just a pocket passer, you want your defensive ends are looking to tee off on Matt Ryan. You're not going to tee off as much on a Cam Newton. You're going to sack him in other ways.
You're going to have to make it really disruptive and put him under duress and not let him have what he wants out of the passing game, out of the rhythm passing, because he works off rhythm. Cam Newton is not the kind of guy that kind of, dillies with this or dillies with that or turns around and hands the ball off too much. If anything, he's going to take off and run with it. So you have to spy for him. And you also, if you do, he can use that against you. A running quarterback can use the old up the field rush and, let's just meet at the quarterback mentality. They'll step up and run. They'll step right up through that and take off. They'll see a lot of open field that they can do damage on, which he does. So defensive ends in that case have to pursue at the depth of the football, no deeper. You have to pursue, keep containment. And if the guy that you're rushing against, the tackle loses grip, loses control, and you can spin quickly back inside and get the sack, then that's how you'll get your sack that way. Also, if Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson, all those guys up the middle, can be disruptive and tear the pocket up, that will get you a sack. They'll force them to you.
That's some meat and potatoes football analysis
right there,
man.
See how that goes?
That's I love that. 651-646-8255. 877-615-1500. Red Cow and Red Rabbit powering Vikings Vent Line. Let's go back to the vent lines. Jimmy in Phoenix, what's up, man? You're on the show.
Hey, I know you touched on a little bit, but do you think this is part of the psychology, Mike? I hope you're right, but is it possible the Vikings peaked too early? I mean, think about this. Their defense really didn't play great today. Their offense dropped passes. Defense had bad penalties. It just was not a good game, period. I mean, I don't think. Yet we were still in it, but did we peak too early? Secondly, we need to talk more about this kicker. I mean, is there anybody that we can sign? I mean, this guy, we're talking, if the Vikings lose in the playoffs, it's going to be because of Kai Horvath or whatever his name is. Or Kai Bath.
I like that. Let's see what you did there.
Yeah.
I would say this, Jimmy. This is the unfortunate thing. Whatever you feel about Kai Horvath or Case Keenum at this point in the season, you're riding Case Keenum and Kai Horvath. There's no one sitting on a couch, and I thought for Case Keenum too. He had some amazing plays where he avoided pressure and made some good clutch throws.
He did.
But he also had some plays. I thought that was a terrible throw to Diggs. The Diggs should have caught. But there was two or three plays where I said, "My God, that's not going to get it done against Russell Wilson in the playoffs." But it doesn't matter. Bridgewater with 3 weeks to go in the season ain't going to ramp up in time. So,
but if we. Hey, guys, if we win two or last three, we're guaranteed the 2 seed, which is a good spot to be. I mean, we'll be guaranteed the 2 seed, basically. But I just wonder if in the playoffs, if we play like this in the playoffs, it's over. We're not going to win a game. I don't care who we play.
Actually,
but,
I think
we didn't peak too early.
I think, Jimmy, it's a good phone call. If you had played at home, things would have felt a little bit different today.
A lot of things that would have changed the course of this game. I mean, having had those two face masks was devastating.
Yeah.
It was devastating. We were going to be our typical defense, get them off the field early in the game, and now here we go, and get on track. Right before the half, it's not a touchdown, so we settle for a field goal, and we go in 14-13 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That changes the entire way you come out and play the second half if you're ahead by 4 points, which that would have done.
Yeah.
So it's really – or by 3 points. But it's a shame because it did happen the way it did, and it's too late. That's the way the game played out. So you have to deal – you take what was dealt to you and know that you can't let that happen again. No such thing as peaking too early. It's just – it doesn't exist, okay? It really doesn't. You either are playing well – and you're playing mistake-free football, and you're not putting the ball on the ground, and the penalty flags aren't flying. So you're either playing smart football or you're playing carelessly.
Yeah,
that determines how good a football team you're going
to
be.
I think I would take what you said about peaking early, and I would tweak it to say, I mean, obviously there have been times where a team plays its best in November, but I don't think you can plan to slowly ramp up week by week. Yeah,
we're peaking too
early. Let's not play too well this week so that we
settle down. Yeah, it doesn't exist. You're trying to play the best football you can
right. Every
single week. Now, it appears that teams are peaking because, yes, they are polishing up mistakes every single week. The good teams are making adjustments every single week to make defense better, to a more sound offense, a more sound running game, whatever the case. They're always trying to pull everything apart and correct it. So it looks like, wow, you know, this team's really coming on. They're peaking. Now, they're cleaning it up and getting better and more efficient at the game, and now a streak comes alive, like a 6-7-8 game winning streak. And now you're really into it. You're into each other, and like someone's going to make a play. Anyone could make a play because they all want to be part of it at that point. But it's not peaking.
Yeah.
That's the way you're starting to play.
One thing Jimmy brought up, his initial point was about Kai Forbath. And one thing I don't want to hear, and I'm sick of hearing, and I saw this today, and maybe it's just because I follow social media too closely during the game. The 54-yarder he missed was an atrocious kick. But the response in general was, yeah, but I mean, it was a 54-yarder. Okay. NFL kickers, especially in 2017, make 54-yarders now.
Oh.
They make 57-yarders. Not every time. But you're telling me in a playoff game, when we're going to weed out the Bears, we're going to weed out the crap teams in the NFC and in the NFL, and you're going to get into a three-point game or a close game in the fourth quarter, and guess what? You're not going to have the best quarterback. So you might have to make a kick from 54 yards because Russell Wilson just stuck it to you in the fourth quarter. You might need that. So, yes, I think it's okay to be worried, very worried about Kai Forbath. At the same time, knowing that, no, nobody is currently sitting on a couch. The trade deadline is gone, and no one trades for kickers anyways. You are riding or dying with Kai Forbath and Case Keenum. So, enjoy it as long as it lasts.
I think that Case Keenum has more than earned his spot in what he does with this football team and how it's going to go and how he's going to go. I saw him slip under all kinds of trouble to make throws and to keep things alive and to come back at the end of that game and tie it up. I saw him do that. Forbath, that kick from 52, I think it was 54, make it 54, I don't care. Like, it's almost expected. I was part of the kicking game for 13 years in the NFL. I mean, you're supposed to make 50, 51, 52, I mean, most of the time. You had better make those kicks. 54, that's not a dreadful kick. That's a good percentage of making that kind of kick. They're that good.
How about shave the upright? You know, shave the upright for me.
Shave it. Like just like a splinter or two off.
Yeah. He just, gosh.
You can't. What he did was atrocious. Number one, perfect snap. Number two, great hold. Put it down. No trouble with the laces, right? Gave him the lean that he wanted. And I mean, he pulls over the top of that ball. Like, if you're a golfer, when you pull over the top of that drive with the driver and you duck hook it left, that's what he did. That's exactly what he did.
That's me at Como in St. Paul with houses nearby on the left. It's bad.
Instead of yelling for it, you're like, knock, knock.
Brian in Kenyon, we have some open phone lines for you guys. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. You're listening to Vikings Vent Line on AM 1500, ESPN Twin Cities, KSTP Minneapolis, St. Paul. What's up, Brian?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. The reason the Vikings beat the Panthers the last two times is because we put the big pressure on Newton. They should have done that right off the bat and sent a message, because I think if they would have succeeded, Carolina would have folded up.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, man. Like, the only play I had an issue with in terms of defending Cam Newton was the one that put him to bed at the end of the game. They let him get loose for like 60 yards. Up until then, So that was a 62-yard run.
They let him do what he does best, and you've said this all along, is they allowed him to play playground football, which they had him in the grass, but, I mean, they had him sacked. And then he steps back straight out of it and throws a touchdown looper right over the top to a guy that's just staying open. He's trying to keep a route open for him to look at.
In fact,
in the end zone too, by the way.
I know you can't take that away because Cam Newton earns those plays, and that's part of his game in the NFL.
That's what he does.
But up until that point, Cam Newton had 10 carries for 8 yards, sacked twice. So sacked twice for 8 yards, and then I believe in addition to that on the rushing side, 10 carries for 8 yards. Yep. So he's averaging less than a yard per carry. And in the air, 13 of 25 for 137 yards. That's 5.5 yards per attempt, a bad interception. They owned Cam Newton today up until that. And my beef with Cam is that he plays like that for large chunks of games and then needs the 60-yard run or needs the big pass interference down the field or the big play. And so people are going to say, oh, Mackie, all week long, you trash Cam Newton. Yeah, because 95% of the game, Cam Newton played terribly against a well-schemed defense, and it wasn't good enough.
50% passing, almost.
They gave up 2 60-yard runs today and had a bunch of dumb penalties, and they almost won the game still.
Almost won the game, and I mean penalty. It was everywhere, all over the place. Had one fumble off of a Keenum fumble, they're going to call it, and the one in the back of the end zone. But the worst thing the Vikings have done, I think, consistently all year long, is get scripted for a play or two in the first drive, which is... I don't know how they hit that run the way they did with the big man, Stewart, but they shifted Khalil over to the other side. They went with an unbalanced line to the right, and we just came up scratching our head on how to defend it, and he just popped straight free. I mean, nobody in the secondary to catch him. I mean, and he was pretty fast for a big guy still, but he housed a huge run. I mean, this team gets burnt. We get burnt sometimes.
It's true.
We always do, and then they settle down, which they did. And then they let the quarterback just punch it. I mean, it was wide open.
But I think, you know,
you got to spy that.
I think you have to live with once in a while you're going to get burnt when you play an aggressive defense. Yeah. I mean, they have aggressive cornerbacks. They call aggressive plays. They're bringing Anthony Barr. You know, it's aggressive. It's an aggressive defense.
Totally
and it burned him a couple times. Mr. Smith in St. Paul, you're on Ventline.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing?
What's going on, man?
Excellent. Let's say this first and foremost. How did we end up coming back if our defense wasn't performing well and doing their part? You cannot make up for 5 drop passes that should have been caught on the offensive side. I mean, you can say all you want, but as a defense, you can only give so much when you're already giving everything you got and you're proving what you can do. But then your offense goes and do what happens. No more comments.
That's Mr. Smith in St. Paul.
Heavy on the mister. I think it was a great point.
They drop passes.
They drop passes today.
I mean, Rudolph dropped a pass.
You can't play like that. Everyone had an off game. It was an ugly game. They did not come out totally prepared to play sharp football for whatever reason. And when it happens all at the same time to everybody. It's like nobody can find a way to get on track. Thielen drops a couple balls. You can't believe he's going to drop one in the end zone. But the one before in the corner at the front side of the end zone was probably should have had it. He knows that.
Yeah, defensive back or linebacker got a hand on that, but he's still, I mean, that's one that he normally catches.
It hit his pads first.
So
it
many
his
things
shoulder.
Today.
It hit his chest plate first, but that's one he always catches and much, much harder catches than that. So
yeah. It's the top of the hour, just a couple minutes past the top of the hour here on 1500 ESPN. Superstar Mike Morris and Phil Mackey. We've been commercial-free for almost an hour thanks to Red Cow and Red Rabbit. We're going to say goodbye to the Facebook streaming crowd. Thank you, guys. Facebook.com/1500ESPN. We have 3 open lines right now if you want to chime in. Your thoughts on this game today, your thoughts on the Vikings' chances and what you think of them going forward after that loss today. The Adam Thielen play that we referenced, and we had a big conversation about it like a half hour ago. You know, do you want the NFL to call that a catch, even if it's not a Vikings play and you're, you know, a little bit biased, admittedly? 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Jeff in Texas. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. So I think Star said it. I think this is a good loss, if there is such a thing. You can say there is or isn't. But the old Vikings, this loss would have happened when Favre was quarterback and he threw the pick, or we had the missed field goal against the Falcons. So I think they get it out of the way, and I think you're right that they're going to say, not going to get, this isn't going to happen again. I just have that feeling about this team. Like, I think it's a good locker room, like they all surround themselves, and I hope Dig realizes that he was a pansy. I didn't want to cuss from the radio.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah. The Hubbards don't want to pay that big FCC violation.
Yeah, and on the Thielen thing, either it's not a touchdown, but then the Stewart reach over the goal line isn't a touchdown. But it's the same. It's both the same. I'm so sick of that. So I'll let it go. Too. But I'm not worried. I'm not worried.
Yeah. You know what? There are only two differences. Really, no, there's only one difference in Stewart's touchdown and the one they did not allow with Thielen is that Stewart obviously has controlled the football for two or three football steps.
And it was a handoff.
Jumped with the football after two or three steps, possession, reach out, touchdown. With Thielen, you argue that he went up for a catch, did not come down with any control foot-wise or football play-wise. That he has to find in him on his way to the ground.
Yeah, well, he has to because
that's the bottom line. It's kind of
because it was a pass, and because when the ball hit his hands, he was deemed to be going to the ground.
Correct.
Which,
and that's the tough part. That's where this gets tough.
So subjective.
That's where it gets really sticky. And if you can't put two hands on a football, and if you can't put your knee or your foot down or both down, you'll need two. With your hands still connected to the football, and that not be a touchdown, then I'm lost. I mean, I'm lost.
Especially if when you go to the ground like that, so you check all the boxes, and now you're going to the ground, and the ball never touches the ground.
Right.
Like the ball stays on your chest, even though it jostles.
Yep.
What am I missing? Why isn't that a catch? And I know that based on the letter of the law, the way it's written, they've written it specifically to negate that.
Yep.
And what I'm saying is, change it. What football fan outside of Carolina is watching that game saying, oh, yes, that is correctly applied. That is the rule. That should not be a catch.
I'm telling you, if you had a ball that had a sensor in it, some type of sensor that detected two hands on it at the same time, I'm just making this up, you know, just follow me. And the end zone was also like an electric grid where you have two taps of whatever body part in the end zone, and a bell goes off. Just pretend that that's how it could be. Then that was a touchdown, and also when you cross the plane of the goals, a horn should go off, and it's a touchdown. We get it.
And if you don't have two hands on the ball, you actually get tased by the same electrical grid.
You get a cattle prod.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you get cattle prodded.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That's what I think football needs. That'd be the best celebration ever. Is to see someone not get a catch or a touchdown, and you prod him with the other team gets to come out with a cattle prod
or
a taser gun.
Let's go to AJ in Plymouth. What's up, AJ? You're on with Star and Mackey.
Good show, guys. Enjoy listening to it.
Thanks, AJ.
Hey, I don't really have a problem with the offense. I mean, we didn't have either starting tackle for the most part. Our center was out, but it kind of just bothers me a little bit that we gave up 30 points to that team. They're not like an offensive juggernaut by any stretch. And it doesn't worry me down the line. It just bugs me that I still don't know how they got 30 points off this defense. It that's a lot of points.
It was the two runs, man. It was the two. This is what it was. I would be much more nervous if I were a Vikings fan trying to hyperanalyze this. If this was a series of 5 and 8 and 15 yard gashes,
yep,
and it just looked like you couldn't get off the field, this game came down to bad drops offensively for the Vikings and a bad series where you had 250. So here's what it is. You had 160 yard run by a running back for a touchdown, uncharacteristic. You had 160 yard run by a quarterback that set up a touchdown, uncharacteristic. And then you had back-to-back 15-yard penalties on a third drive, a third and separate drive that put the Panthers right in there in scoring range, and that's how you wind up with 31 points. It wasn't a series of 8-yard run here, 15-yard pass there.
It wasn't
a dissection. It was three drives, two huge runs, and two bad penalties, and that's how you get to 31 points. It was I'm not going to say fluke, because 60-yard plays happen and you should stop them. And the Vikings defense deserves blame for not stopping those runs.
That's true.
But to say that that's just like a thing that's going to happen all the time.
When you have two enormous people, and I think it was Daniil Hunter and maybe Griffin and maybe Brian Robinson who was playing inside at the time, put him on the ground. Don't let him back out of that and throw a touchdown, because there's someone running wide open after about 10 seconds of nothingness. You know, you can't cover him that long. But they are a good enough defense to put him on his back when they have a gimme sack. I know he's a big guy. It doesn't matter. Put him on the ground. If you have two guys meeting at him, get him on the ground. Grab his arm, grab the football, strip it, whatever else. He drops, he pulls himself right back out of it and stands up straight and just fires one right over the top of the defense. And it's a touchdown. There's another touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's on the defense, just not making a play that they normally make all the time.
Yeah, it for sure is. And I don't mean to say that, the defense is going to look at film and say, wow, we got gashed on two or three plays and that's bad. But I just don't think it's symptomatic of what you can expect in the coming weeks. I don't think all of a sudden now teams are going to start busting off 60-yard runs on a regular basis against this team.
Like the late, great Denny Green would say, we are who we thought we are. He didn't really say that. this team is who it is right now. That defense is real deal. You don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, you know, they're gonna give up the next three games and we're gonna not make the playoffs or whatever else. We're a good defense. We're a great defense.
Yeah, more than
you read the stats already before the run at the end of the game by Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean,
we had him contained. We had him completely contained, and we had shut down the passing game. But you allow a couple really bad plays. That touchdown over the top where you should have sacked him. Him taking off and galloping almost for a touchdown.
Yeah, this is for all you Cam Newton apologists out there who keep hitting me up on Twitter and emailing me, see, Mackie, you were... Listen, I was wrong. I thought the Vikings would win this game by a touchdown or more. I was wrong in the end in that I thought the Vikings defense would stick it to Cam Newton.
They normally do.
They stuck it to Cam Newton for 2.5 hours today, and then he busts off a 60-yard run. Before that, he had 137 yards passing and 8 rushing yards on 10 carries. Okay?
That's all there is to it.
So,
and if you're going to let him have the home run ball, you may lose the game. And he had a home run touchdown. He made the play by stepping back out of that and not getting sacked. Avoiding the sack and having pocket presence and still throwing a touchdown pass is a pretty special thing.
Man, the NFL is so fun today. We've got so many great afternoon games here. We've got Seahawks and Jaguars are in action. A couple teams looking to punch playoff tickets here. You've got Eagles and Rams. Eagles up 14-7 on the road right now. Jaguars up 3-0 on Seattle in the second quarter.
And they've been flashing different games, parts of different games on the big screen that we're looking at right now. And I mean, the Eagle-Ram thing is it's a fist fight.
Yeah.
It's the same as a fist fight. I mean, you got to watch that game. Any of you out there, after we're done talking to you, you watch that game. It's going to be a good one.
Or mute it and
listen to us.
And Eric and Edina, what's going on, man?
Gentlemen, great show. Hey, a couple things. Are you telling us that Cam Newton is the Miguel Sano of the NFL, feast or famine?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, in some ways, that's why. Yes, you go ahead and make your point, but I think I've stated my case on Cam Newton. I think he's overrated.
I agree. So one thing, and maybe you've got a guy who spent a lot of time in the NFL who can speak to this, but there's a reason the NFL doesn't schedule NFL teams on the road 3 weeks in a row. They never cover the spread, and they very rarely win. And what is it psychologically in an NFL player on that third week? Is it just the mundane getting into the hotel and everything else, or what is it that gives the visiting team that third week in a row a kind of dismal performance?
I you know what? I'll be honest. I don't think I ever played 3 games in a row on the road.
I don't think
I ever did that. And I know it's a lot to win 3 games on the road. Or 4 games on the road. I think at this point, up until this game, we had won 5 games on the road consecutively. That's a big deal. I think the Niners in the 80s won 19 or 20 games on the road in a row.
That's insane.
But 3 in a row. I'm talking about lining up 3 weeks in a row on the road. I can't even tell you what that is, but it must be bad. It must be, you know, when do we get to see or hear the crowd for us? I mean, you roll into the old hostile environment, as Dennis Green used to say. And you try and steal something out of their backyard and bring it home. 3 weeks in a row in the National Football League is pretty tough to do. And we almost did it. We played incredibly sloppy football for the Vikings and a Mike Zimmer team.
They're 10-3 right now. Big picture here. It's really easy in the NFL and, you know, emotions and fans and stuff to get caught in the weeds of what just happened and annoying things just happened and they lost a game. But big picture, 30,000 feet. Case Keenum's in the MVP discussion, probably even still as you go down the stretch. Tom Brady or someone's going to win it, or Carson Wentz, but Case Keenum might get a vote here or there. So that, from 30,000 feet, the fact that Case Keenum's playing the way that he has this season is great. Vikings defense, for the most part, has been fantastic. They're 10-3.
They ran eight games against some pretty good people, too, by the way. And some good quarterbacks, opposing quarterbacks. We have definitely turned a new page this year in Vikings football. There's no question about it in my mind. And there are three left. You know, you got Cincinnati, Green Bay, Chicago. I think that we'll find out exactly who we are in these last three games. That's who we truly are going to – going into the playoffs, if you can play well going into the playoffs and take some momentum in there with you, you got a good chance to advance. And that's all you want to do, is make the playoffs and then advance.
Yeah, we'll take a final round of phone calls here. Let's take our first break after over an hour here. But we have some open lines, and we will take a final round or two of phone calls, starting with Luke when we come back. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Vikings fall, still 10-3, keeping an eye on that Rams-Eagles game. Rams currently trailing the Eagles 14-7 at home. It's Mackey, it's Star, it's Ventline.
Here's what you may have missed on a recent Purple podcast.
And then, you know, you get to the end of the game, and we have the same sort of thing. For some reason, and I have no idea why, maybe this is how they blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, the Atlanta Falcons decide to kick a field goal, which is one of the worst coaching decisions I have ever seen in my life. With 5 minutes left, I don't know if they ran out of timeouts. They must have run out of timeouts on the last drive, but they were getting grinded out on the other side. So they've got 5 minutes left, third and short, and they decide to kick a field goal that would still put them down in the game. Just a baffling decision. But you know what the Vikings did? They gave them no chance to redeem themselves after that horrible decision.
You can find the Purple Podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, or 1500ESPN.com's podcast page.
The show solely devoted to your reaction on the game. Vikings Vent Line now continues.
Third and one. And they run it straight ahead. Oh, breaking it! No one in the secondary! It's going the distance! Jonathan Stewart, 60 yards!
Darius Wright has come onto the field as an extra receiver. Keenum down the middle, he goes, and in the end zone, it is caught by Rudolph for the touchdown. Here's Keenum escaping and getting it to Rudolph. Wow, for the second time, he's able to duck under a hit and make a play, this time for 13 yards. Captain Munnerlin had him.
All right, final segment of Vikings Vent Line here. Vikings lose on the road at Carolina, the rare third consecutive road game against a team fighting for its playoff life. That was Carolina today. If they lose and then things, you know, the Packers win, Aaron Rodgers comes back, Carolina in a real tough spot if they don't win that game today and breathes new life into their playoff hopes. But the Vikings lose 24-31, and they're still sitting there just a game back in the loss column of Philadelphia, which is leading 14-7 and threatening right now on the road to score again against the Rams. He's the superstar, Mike Morris. I'm Phil Mackey. Jonathan taking your calls and running the board. Luke and Breezy Points, your thoughts on this Vikings-Panthers crazy game today?
Hey, I thought it was a great game. I don't think games can get much better than what we saw today, except if the Vikings would have came out on top, you know. You know, there's not too much I can take away from that game other than, you know, I know you guys have already, you know, touched on the defensive line. I know someone brought up Neil Hunter and Everson Griffin, and you know, I do wish, I know that Zimmer probably was messing with the defense. You know, that was his plan to contain Cam, but you know, I think you guys too would have loved to see Cam on his, you know, get hit a couple times more than what he did. But I think we did a great job with him. And one other thing, you know, I really did miss a little bit was that Tay chain today was kind of derailed by Carolina today. I wish we would have, you know, kept running a little bit. You know, Murray, McKinnon really stepped up today, I thought. And, you know, the Vikings in a spot right now. I think they're in a really good spot. So I'm feeling pretty good as a Vikings fan right now, coming in as the second seed at the end of the week, you know. I'm fine with that. So, you know, you guys have a good show, and thank you very much.
Yeah, Luke, thanks for the phone call, man. That seems to be kind of the sentiment, superstar, that I don't sense outrage from Vikings fans today.
I mean, I don't either. I really don't, because when you fight back and tie the game up, and you have a pretty good chance to win it even at the end. I mean, that interception by Zendejo, by the way, oh, I think you're going to see something there too, where he cuts inside and he's got nothing but open space down the sidelines for a touchdown. Not to say that, you know, the Panthers wouldn't come back and answer the bell, which they would have if that had been a touchdown. Even Cam Newton came in and scored a touchdown right after that with that long run. I mean, it wasn't him that scored the touchdown. Anyway, what I'm saying is, would it have changed the outcome in the game? Maybe. Yeah. You never know what those kinds of things do. It just completely can take the wind out of your sail to have a pick six.
By the way, bad news for the Vikings here. Carson Wentz with his third touchdown pass of the day. He's up. His 32 touchdown passes ties, or maybe sets. I just saw the nugget flash. A new single-season Eagles record for touchdown passes in a season with three more games and another half to play here. So they're up 21-7 on the road in Los Angeles. If the Eagles win that game today, they don't have a ton of tough games left on their schedule, and they'd be a game up on the Vikings with maybe an extra tiebreaker in hand. So, yeah, it would be really tough for the Vikings to gain home field throughout the NFC playoffs if the Eagles were to continue on and win this game. Let's go to Margaret in Indianapolis. What's going on, Margaret?
Hi guys. When you live out of market, you have to go to your local establishment to watch the game. And we don't have sound because of course the Colts game gets sound.
Yeah.
But there were Packer fans, there were Bears fans, there were myself and one other Vikings fans. I don't know where they all are in this part of the country, but Carolina fans, and everybody called that steal and catch a touchdown. And I know rules, you know, we've been over it, can't beat a dead horse, but it's just, we got to get behind them, and this is a loss. It's not the end of the season, it's just a loss.
Yeah, it's a good phone call, Margaret. Think about, Star, all the things that had to happen against the Vikings in that game, either self-inflicted, uncharacteristically, or officials, whatever it was, all the things that had to happen for them to barely lose on the road.
Yep. And so uncharacteristic of this team. I mean, if you were to tell me a day like yesterday that the defense is going to allow a 62-yard run at the end of the game by Cam Newton, especially after we pretty much owned him, we've had his number for the last two or three outings, I mean, I would have just said you're crazy. I mean, this defense normally figures out exactly what they want to do after about a half a quarter, and then it's on. What happened? I mean, they gave up a big run to Stewart, and we know about the big run to Cam. You start having rules and regulations dictate some pretty big plays in the game, which we did twice, and that's what you have. And on the road and all kinds of things in between there that we haven't even – maybe discussed yet, but losing a ton of offensive linemen and moving everyone around up front again. And we had this game tied up. We had it tied up. You can only hope moving forward that we've got some of those offensive linemen healthy, elf line, especially Riley Reiff, the left tackle. That counts. Trust me, that one counts as your priority guy that you'd want to have back. But, and we got a problem. This team's got a problem no matter what, and it's Forbath. That's a big problem.
It is, but there's, you know, with some problems, oh man, the right tackle sucks. Well, let's try someone else.
Yep.
You're to the
kicker
point
is
where
a kicker?
Whoever your kicker is in December is your kicker.
Yep. The cavalry's not coming.
You can make a change. You can make a swap in September, October. The Vikings did it with Blair Walsh last year.
Yep.
In December, this is your army. This is your team. This is your quarterback, and this is your kicker. We have full phone lines right now. 651-646-8255. Let's go to Michael across the border in Wisconsin. What's up, Michael?
Hey guys, how are you doing today?
You know what? We're
could be better.
We're watching some good football in the afternoon here. We're not complaining.
Superstar, I want to say thank you to you. I was 9 years old when you did a bad snap to Mitch Berger, which caused us to lose the 98 championship game.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And I also wanted to thank Case Keenum for three passes in particular. Number one, the pass to Thielen, that first interception that he threw behind him. I mean, he's trying to throw their defense back. He would have been spot on. Number two, that pass to Diggs, where he threw it high. When, say what you will, if Case Keenum is going to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback or even like an average quarterback, you got to hit Diggs in the numbers. And number three, that third and goal at the end of the game, when we were down by a three, Thielen was open if Case did, if Case leads Thielen a bit more, and instead Case decided to throw it to the defensive back instead and cause the incomplete pass and cause Ty to kick the field goal, to tie the game. And I just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts on Case Keenum and whether he's still the hot hand, as it were, and whether we might see Teddy next week, because I don't think Case has the ability or is accurate enough to come out and throw for 300 touchdowns and 300 yards, three touchdowns, and win us the game.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Wait, do you want to stay on while we answer?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, you know what? Number one, I'm sorry. I always say this, too. I've said it for years about the bad snap in 98.
Okay, I forget that.
I mean, I just want you to know that I'm sorry about that. If you're a Viking fan, if you're a Packer fan, then I know you probably made your day. So that to you, that's Merry Christmas.
Okay.
The one to Thielen or just the several passes that you thought were off by Case Keenum, you're right. You're totally right. They were bad passes, and Aaron Rodgers would not have made those. He wouldn't have done that. So you're right on all counts, every count. So good for you.
You know,
Merry
what?
Christmas.
Do I get an apology? I was 13.
You want to?
I was 13 when you made that bad snap. I cried after that game. So
okay,
I'm sitting right here in the studio. If you want to apologize to me,
say,
too.
I would just say to you that if I could have done it all over again, I would have brought it down about 5 inches, and I'm sure you would have made it. But I'm sorry, guys. Both
Thank
of you.
Thank you. Okay.
If you're still
Appreciate
there, I'm sorry to both of you guys.
No. Yeah.
I mean, can we just let it? Can we let it end here today?
Listen, I've been. And thank you to Michael in Wisconsin there. I've been emotionally distant in all my relationships with sports and people since that bad snap. So
well,
I feel like this is very therapeutic.
It helps me a lot, too, to get that off my chest again.
Is it fair to say that this is the black and white thing we always do with football, that it either terrible or Case Keenum is very nuanced. Case Keenum had some really, really good plays today, just
he
like
did.
He's had some really, really good games and plays all season. Also, when I was watching Case Keenum for 3 hours today, I'm thinking, you know what? The NFC playoffs are going to include Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, maybe a Matt Ryan, a Carson Wentz who has three more touchdown passes today. Oh, and by the way, if you do make it through that collection of quarterbacks, awaiting on the other side is a Tom Brady or a Ben Roethlisberger. Do I think that Case Keenum fits into that collection, any of those guys that I just named? No, I don't. But if the criticism of Case Keenum comes with, so you should turn to Teddy Bridgewater, I was curious about that a month ago when you might have had like 7 weeks to ramp Bridgewater up. The runway's too short. The runway is too short for a guy who hasn't played in two full years. So this is it. Like, am I a little nervous that Case Keenum's going to throw two bad picks against the Seattle Seahawks in a home playoff game? Yes. Yes, I am.
I guarantee you every one of those quarterbacks that you named in front of Case Keenum will have the same problems. And I was kidding with the caller. I mean, this kid has done an incredible job. Look at the efficiency. Just go to his stat line if you're a stat person. All the way across. Right up there with anybody in the league. Anybody in the league. The only thing he doesn't have is experience and wins and playoffs and those kinds of things that those other quarterbacks that you mentioned always have been known for. Outside of that, he has competed every single game admirably, even today. Even it didn't go his way, and he had some mistakes. And I guarantee you, every quarterback at every level does the same thing. Now, you want to throw Teddy Bridgewater into that mix with those offensive linemen all nicked up, and that is not your set offensive line, the way we ended that game today. So Keenum was under duress, no question. I saw it. Everyone did. You put Bridgewater back there. You really want to do that to a guy that hasn't played?
No, that's, two years, no, that's out of the question right now.
That's no.
That's out of the question right now. You've gone too far into the season, and it's...
You're right. There's not enough runway.
You're going to ride or die unless Case Keenum takes a helmet to knock out four ribs. It's a good segue to our guy Bob in Pennsylvania. What's up, Bob? You're on Ventline.
Hey, what's up? It was a great game today. Tough loss on the road. And what our defense needs to do more to win a Super Bowl is to avoid those big plays. And the big play in this game was obviously the Cam Newton run that resulted in their touchdown drive. And I think it was Sendejo who missed the tackle that broke him loose.
It was, yep.
He cannot overrun that play. He can't give him the big yardage. You have to, you know, give him the first down, let him gain 10, not 60 or 70. So... what I saw today, though, was the ability of the offense to come back down 11 and tie this game. And the thing that was the best thing about that was the whole game, Kuechly and Carolina took away the usual Shurmur pass to the running back or the quick out to Rudolph. That play, I don't even think they completed one pass the whole game like that. They took that away, and I think they took that away because of the injuries to our offensive line. And, you know, those guys would get down the field, they would block, they would open up lanes, and we'd get big yardage on those plays, but they was taken away, and we resorted to an offense that we threw the ball down the field. You know, Keenum, you know, does what he always does, and... the play against Munderland, you know, he ducked, he made the completion. I mean, he was captain comeback today, and he still has the eye of the tiger, by the way. He still has it. And I'll tell you what, I like that about the offense. We had the ability to come back. The defense has had a tendency to give up big, big plays. They've done it over the last few years. I've noticed that. Sometimes they'll jump routes. You know, it's a risk that we take. We have a tight defense, but we tend to give up big plays. And, you know, we can't give up those big plays against these good teams. So, the thing that concerns me the most is the kicker. You know, it's just the biggest concern of all.
He doesn't have the eye of the tiger.
No, he doesn't.
No.
He has the eye of
the tiger. He needs the eye of the tiger. In his big toe, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's ever going to come up about that.
Well, he's got the eye of the possum right now. He wants to roll over.
He's got a lead foot, is what he has.
Yeah, he does. You tell him.
Yeah, he kicks like his knees go outward instead of, you know, like tigers, the back legs, their knees go the opposite direction as humans. That's what that 54-yard kick looked like.
So he's got the leg of a tiger. That's good.
That was ugly.
Yeah, that was not good. That was a really bad attempt at a field goal of no more than 54 yards, I think. And, I mean, you want to talk about panicking and just coming over the top of that football.
Wow.
That was ugly. It was going sideways. It was spinning sideways. He hit it so off. It was terrible. I mean, that ball had no chance. The snap was good. The hold was good.
The announcers needed, Tony Romo and Jim Nance needed like three replays to prove like, oh, that wasn't blocked. Oh, yeah. Let's go to commercial.
How could they say it was blocked? It wasn't even close to being blocked.
No, I know. No, but it looked coming off the foot. Bob, thank you, man. We appreciate you calling in from Pennsylvania every week. Just to answer a couple things on Twitter here, because I don't think it's panic mode. I'm sort of downplaying the loss in some ways today, and Vito chimes in. Vikings lose home field, and it's no big deal, according to @PhilMackey. I guess what I'm saying is, in a vacuum, in the Vikings' own lane, if they finish 13-3 and this is as bad as it looks, I would say you should feel pretty good about your team in general. Now, if another team happens to look better and is 14-2, I'm not going to be outraged over that. I guess, okay, bad luck, go into Philadelphia and beat them, you know? If
you're going to have to anyway.
If they had four games like this, I'm sorry. This was the third consecutive road game. And if it just so happens that Philadelphia rolls into L.A. and then runs the table and goes 14-2, you tip your cap and you try to beat them in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And if you don't, you're not going to beat Tom Brady, even if it's a home Super Bowl anyways. I'm sorry. So
I'm telling you right now, this team has, gone way further than I think any of us thought they were going to. And that's if it all ended today at just 10 wins. When Bradford went out after the first game, for any of us to be sitting here having the conversations we've had over the last 5 or 6 weeks, I mean, you got to be kidding me. No one thought this was coming. This guy's playing good football. Keenum is playing good football. This team is playing really good football. We have a kicker that we don't know what's going to happen sometimes. But this team has advanced through that win column pretty nicely. And if you've got three more left, I don't care if we have home field advantage in the playoffs or not. You got to win them all. To win a Super Bowl, you got to win them all. So if you want to play your last home game here at the Super Bowl, you're going to have to go through a lot of people, good people. So bring it on. Whatever you got, you got to face what you got dealt to you. You earn the right to have a bye week and a home field advantage. And if you like you said, if you come up 13-3 or whatever it is, you have to play your cards. You're in the playoffs. You did what you were supposed to do. You're in the playoffs. You won your division. You better start playing some real football because the bar does notch up on intensity.
Now, I think if they don't get a first round bye, if this thing spirals or something, or they lose on the road to Green Bay, then I'm going to be much more upset with this team. If you can just assure yourself even that number two seed, there's no guarantees Philadelphia is going to win a game against, let's say, Seattle in the second round of the playoffs, or if Aaron Rodgers comes back and leads the Packers to the playoffs, or Matt Ryan or whatever it is.
Philadelphia's already lost to Seattle.
Sure, yeah.
That was
in Seattle, and it would be different if it were in Philadelphia, but
totally.
Never know. Let's take three more phone calls here, Star, on Ventline. We've been live, thanks to Red Cow, Red Rabbit, with one commercial break for over an hour and a half. Steven in Madison, you're on the show.
Hey, guys. First of all, I just want to say, I forgive you for 98. We can let it go.
I appreciate that. Not kidding.
Unfortunately, I have to disagree with you a little bit on some of your assessment about Keenum. You know, there's lots of reasons why we lost today. The offensive line, all the injuries, the TD rules, the stupid catch rules, there are a lot of drops, there's the kicker. But I think you got to put Keenum also in that category of reasons why we didn't win. You know, he gets tons of credit every week for his receivers bailing him out, and this week they didn't. But ultimately, he had a chance at the end of the game. He had a couple chances there to, you know, be clutch. Everybody plays, every team has ugly games, but the good quarterbacks, you know, when you put the ball in their hands after an ugly game, they put it all behind them, they put the team on their back, and they are able to put together some scoring drives, and Keenum just really wasn't able to do that today. You know, everyone looks at him and says, oh, poor Case, you know, offensive line played bad, and the team was dropping the ball, but, I mean, and credit to the offense, they came back and had a chance, but really, I think it was the defense that got him back in it with the interception. They gave the ball back to Case a couple times, and he just couldn't quite do it, and I'm not saying we should necessarily go to Teddy. I know that there's a lot of issues with that. But I do think, you know, Teddy, when he did have the chance, he was able to make those drives happen, even in ugly games, even if he didn't put up big stats. You know, whenever you gave the ball to Teddy at the end of the game, I always felt like he was going to give us a chance to win. And I guess I don't feel like Keenum does what everybody else does in the league. I don't feel like he gave us a shot to win that game. I was just...
You don't like the fact that he completed a pass to Adam Thielen that was taken for a touchdown, and then a 2-point conversion. A throw to Bell or whatever it was in the corner of the end zone. Those are clutch plays, and I mean, it got him back in the game.
Yeah, he made a couple plays there, but he also missed some really key plays. You know, he missed Diggs, it gets intercepted. He missed, I don't remember if it was Thielen or Diggs in the end zone. He made a bad throw. Last drive, he's taking sacks, he's throwing ducks. You know, I mean, I think. You know, the best guys, you know, they don't put it on their offensive line. They put it on their own back, and they make something happen.
See,
so
here's, you know, the reality.
He may be the best we've got for now, and that's fine. But I guess when I also get concerned thinking about what we're going to do for the future here, because I'm really hesitant to turn the keys over to Keenum for the future. So.
Right. Steven, it's a good phone call. Now the future thing is a totally that's a different conversation, but here's the reality. I more agree with you than Steven in that case, but where you guys are both sort of right is Case Keenum, if you were to rank the quarterbacks in the NFL right now, the starting quarterbacks in the NFL,
yep,
based on how wide is the range of what they could give you in a game or a season or a career, Case Keenum can play like an MVP some weeks and during some quarters and some halves, but he also has that bottom end where he is making two or three bad throws that result in interceptions or whatever it is. Like, he's got, when you watch Tom Brady, if Tom Brady were a mutual fund, Tom Brady has all the upside of the best stocks in the world with zero losses, like zero chance to, you're not going to lose on a Tom Brady stock.
Low risk.
Super low risk. Aaron Rodgers is going to give you all of the upside of Apple in its heyday, and he's not going to give you the Enron bottom out, lose all your money, or 2008 stock market, right? Case Keenum will give you a little of both sometimes. Now, this season, it's been a lot more gains, and there's been a lot more positives than negatives. But if you look at his career and even in some games, he's much more likely. He has such a wide range of what he could give you. He's much more likely to give you the devastation than Rodgers, Brady, Russell Wilson, and those types of guys. I mean, today, whatever. Like, he was inaccurate at times. He was super clutch at times, and this was a great microcosm of who Case Keenum is.
I just think, yeah, he's a reliable source to at quarterback to be able to use that. This guy week in, week out has been a real joy to watch come along and for the story to play out. It's been quite a story for him. I'm not surprised that he's made some mistakes, but I don't see an awful lot of them. I see 68% completions. I see a great third down efficiency quarterback. I see a guy that can scramble and make something happen out of nothing. I see a guy that doesn't get upset, stays poised, and keeps in the game when he would be the guy that you would expect to be the weak link and to fall away and fade, is that he gets up and he goes over and studies his iPad and comes back out and figures something out for you. I see composure there and leadership and ability, a lot of ability. He slips under tackles. He gets out and he makes something happen with his feet. He's done an awful lot more right than wrong. And you can look at his passer rating, and you can look at his completions, and you can look at his touchdown interception ratio, and you're going to look at pretty good numbers every time, every single time. And that's with Teddy Bridgewater breathing down his neck and shoulder pads and a helmet on the sideline. So, yeah, he's not Tom Brady. And there are not many. There's only one Tom Brady. I mean, I don't know if anyone else like him.
I guess the problem is, he's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Russell Wilson. And you might have to go through two of those three if you want to win a Super Bowl at home. And that's where there's a little
bit
of angst here.
Those are pretty special people. I mean, I don't care. There's only been 8 or 10 outstanding, just like franchise quarterbacks in this league's history. Not many people have one. Some people have never had one.
Yeah, it would be a fun exercise. Maybe we can do this tomorrow when you're on the Mackey and Judd show. If we redid the tiers of quarterbacks in the NFL, and then where would Case Keenum fall?
Sure.
And I can almost guarantee that you and I would have him in different tiers. That you might put him in like tier 2, and I probably put him in tier 3. But has a bunch of great things around him.
Yeah.
Now this defense, it wasn't great today at times, but I think this defense is good enough to win a Super Bowl, perhaps with a tier 3 quarterback. I think they can win a Super Bowl with the way Case Keenum has played for the most part this season. Let's take our final phone call here on Vikings Vent Line. Mark and Pierce, wrap it up for us. What are your thoughts?
Okay, well, I've been a Vikings fan since the first 4 Super Bowl losses. I remember the Kansas City Super Bowl, so I've got a wealth of experience with this team. And as far as bonehead plays go, the snap that Superstar made is far down on the number of bonehead plays that have been made in the history of the Vikings.
Thank you.
Now, another thing I could tell you is that fans have got to just sit back and enjoy this. We have got a team that could do something special, and they just lost a game, third road game in a row, without their starting center, without their starting right tackle, and they lost their starting left tackle. In what, the third quarter?
Yep.
And so blaming Case Keenum for things that he really had no control over doesn't do us any good. Everybody just relax and enjoy the rest of the season because it's going to be something special. The last thing, I think it's kind of funny that these Packer fans have got nothing better to do than to call into a Vikings call-in show and try to rub it in when their team is 7-6 and scrambling to get into the playoffs, and we're 10-3. Now, that's a testament to what losers Packer fans are, because they've got nothing else in their lives except their football team. And how their football team goes is how their lives go. And I just think it's kind of an interesting sociological experiment whenever you get Packer fans on the phone of these call-in shows, because you can always tell what you're going to get depending upon how the team looked that particular day. And it's always either, we're the greatest thing since sliced bread and Aaron Rodgers is a second coming of Christ, or it's like, we got to fire McCarthy. We got to fire Ted Thompson. You know, they don't, I just find it interesting that they've got nothing better to do than to call you guys and give you a hard time about a game, that the third game, road game that you lost.
I want to give Mark a round of applause for bringing the most fire. Mark went from very valid Vikings points over to ripping the Packers, and Mark sounds like he's on a treadmill right now. Brought some historical perspective. Thank you, Mark.
Are you walking right now?
Yeah, I'm out for my post-game walk. See, I listen to you guys. I listen to you guys every time. I never call in because I'm always walking.
Attaboy.
But that one.
That's how you do it.
Huh?
That's. I'm proud of you. You're getting your fitness in.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, I'm 60 years old. I got to do something.
There you go. There you go.
Anyway,
I want to thank you also for letting me off the hook in '98.
Hey, yeah.
A little bit.
You got no problem. I remember Fran Tarkenton in the Oakland Super Bowl. Talk about a bonehead performance.
Oh, my God.
And the other thing, superstar,
yeah.
If Denny hadn't taken a knee before halftime, they never would have needed that field goal.
That's true. That's true.
So there you go.
Boom. Mark, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well done. Continue your walk.
Watch out for traffic. Just be careful
out
there.
Yeah, look
both ways. Yep. Some black ice down there. You just don't want to slip. Yep. Man, that was
he was a great. That, I mean, he had everything in a nutshell. Quite a little synopsis of this gridiron matchup that we had today. He was wonderful, and out of breath. I mean, the fact that he could stay the course that he was on, and to breathe through it, and to fight and struggle through it. I mean, he was willing to go the extra distance. Everybody, you guys are just sitting comfortably in your sofa, your chair, just hacking on us.
He's popping power takes
across
multiple generations while power walking. Power takes while power walking.
I mean, and you never. I mean, he might have had a dog on a leash with him too, trying to keep all that under control. You people are lazy out there. So lazy. Get up and do some walking and talk to us and get your brain to fire a little bit. Some of those takes you had today were horrible. A lot of them were really good. There were some, that Packer guy, I'm telling you what a loser. If I were you and I had to work that hard to beat the Cleveland Browns, I'd quit football. Or I'd quit being a football fan. You guys are losers.
Skull Vikings, let's win this game. Skull Vikings, honor your name. Go get that first down, then get a touchdown. Suck 'em, suck 'em. Aye, 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 aye. Skull Vikings, run up the score. You'll hear us yell for more. B-I-K-I-N-G-S. Skull Vikings, let's go.
Take that.
Yeah.
Bastard.
That's right. What was the most important thing you learned about the Vikings today after a narrow loss on the road to the Carolina Panthers?
I'm going to go with this. One thing is for sure. They've got fight. They always fight. And I guess I didn't learn that. I knew that coming into it. Three road games. Everything goes to hell in a handbasket. Calls are not going your way. You're losing your offensive lineman again. Find a way to stay in this game until the end. That's just want to. That's just persistence and trying to find a way, an ugly way to win a football game. You have to be mentally tough. I mean, you hear Tom Brady talk about you got to be mentally tough. You got to be really, really tough mentally to win these games. And they showed that to me today. And they're mentally very, very tough, and they will fight until the bitter end.
You know what I learned, superstar? That after 32 years watching National Football League football, I still have no idea on God's green earth what the hell a catch is. I have no idea.
I'm with you. I played
13. No idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm right there with you. If you find out what a catch is, please tell, call me. Any time of day. Like, it could be 3 o'clock tomorrow morning. Call me and let me know what that is, because I have no earthly idea what a catch is.
I'm going to sleep on it, and I think tomorrow on the Mackey and Judd show, I'm going to draw my own rules up of what a catch should be. I'm going to scrap the NFL's rule book and tell you what a catch should be on the show tomorrow.
I'll help you lobby it to get it passed. But I played with Chris Carter and Randy Moss, and I don't know what a catch is.
Yeah, well, those guys, in fairness, never dropped any or made it close point. Even, so yeah, it was easy. Point. But that was almost 2 hours, thanks to Red Cow and Red Rabbit. Only one commercial break, because we just load it with value and content here. Vikings Vent Line. Find it on demand, 1500ESPN.com or iTunes if you missed anything. Superstar Mike Morris with us from noon to 1 tomorrow on Mackey and Judd. Thanks to Jonathan Manny behind the scenes. We'll see you next week. 3 more regular season games, and then, barring an epic meltdown, playoffs ahead. Vikings Vent Line.
Playoffs?
You guys.
Darius Wright has come onto the field as an extra receiver. Keenum down the middle, he goes, and in the end zone, it is caught by Rudolph for the touchdown. Here's Keenum escaping and getting it to Rudolph. Wow, for the second time, he's able to duck under a hit and make a play, this time for 13 yards. Captain Munnerlin had him. Keenum in the Vikings, first play of the second half, and he was hit when he threw it by Addison. And now a ball. Are they going to say it's a fumble? What's going on here?
Yeah, no whistles.
Mike Adams has the football.